Jezri, meanwhile, had been staring at Cord's machine. Cord had manipulated some controls that had caused the lightning head to retract as far up as it would go and the table to thrust itself forward. She vaulted up onto that steel slab. In small premeditated steps, she came to the part of it that tilted and rotated, which by itself was a machine of impressive size. Before resting her weight on a foot, she would wiggle it to and fro, scattering shards and twists of silver metal to either side. They made glinting music as they found their way to the floor, and some left corkscrews of fine smoke along their paths. A helper approached with an empty cart, a broom, and a shovel, and began pushing the scraps into a pile.
"It carves the metal from a block," Jezri said. "Not with a blade, but with an electrical discharge that melts the stuff away."
"More than melts. Remember the color of the light?" I said. "It turns the metal to..."
"Plasma," we said in unison, and Jezri went on.
"It just carves off all the bits that aren't wanted."
This raised the question of what was wanted. The answer was clamped to the top of the rotating table, a sculpture of silver metal, flowing and curved like an antler, swelling in places to knobs pierced by perfect cylindrical holes. Cord drew a wrench from the thing she was wearing, which seemed more harness than garment, as its chief purpose was to secure tools to her body. She released three vices, put the wrench back in its ordained pocket, threw back her shoulders, bent her knees, made her spine long, raised her hands, and clasped them around two prongs of this thing she had made. It came up off the table. She carried it down off the machine as if it were a cat rescued from a tree, and set it upon a steel cart that looked older than a mountain. The Eda ran his hands over it. His tall hat turned this way and that as he bent to inspect certain details. Then he nodded and exchanged a few words with Cord and pushed the cart off into smoke and quiet.
"It's a part for the clock," Jezri said. "Something must have broken or worn out down in the cellar."
I agreed that the style of the thing reminded me of some parts of the clock, but I shushed him because I was more interested in Cord just now. She was walking toward us, almost but not quite stepping on strewn shards of metal, wiping her hands on a rag. Her hair was cut short. I thought at first that she was tall, perhaps because that was how I remembered her. In truth, she was no taller than I. She seemed stocky with all that hardware strapped to her, but her neck and forearms were firm. She drew to within a couple of paces and clanked to a stop and planted herself. She had a quite solid and deliberate manner of standing. She seemed as though she could sleep standing up, like a horse.
"I guess I know who you are," she said to me.
"But what is your name?"
"Erasmus now."
"Is that the name of an old saunt?"
"That's right."
"I never did get that old fetch to run."
"I know, I just saw it."
"Took part of it here to be machined and never left." She gazed at the palm of her right hand, then looked up at me. I understood this to mean, "My hand is dirty, but I will shake it if you please." I extended my hand and clasped hers. The sound of bells drifted in.
"Thank you for letting us see your machine," I said. "Would you care to see ours?"
"Well, that's Provener. Jezri and I have to go wind the clock." "I went to Provener one time."
"Today you can see it from where we see it.
Bon Appert."
"Bon Appert," she returned.
"Okay, what the heck. I'll come see it."